You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 8 November. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Pekley Radenhurst from Herenia Capital Advisors. We'll touch on the Russell 2000 and NASPASS. Talking with Jason Lightfoot from Future Growth, fixed capital formation. What does it mean and why is our number so masterly low? And then chatting around the China. We've talked about it before, these VIEs, such as how Tencent actually exists and how companies such as Process own them. What are the risks involved in that? The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb: robust recovery in civil construction anticipated. It's off a low base, dependent on government tender awards and project implementation. Certainly the AfriMat Construction Index has ticked higher. It's not running, but it has ticked higher. From Bloomberg, it broke late last night. MTN said to make a takeover approach for Telkom. MTN buying Telkom. Telkom has apparently shown no interest, and it remains unclear whether MTN will continue its pursuit. But that could be quite some humdinger. Morning markets: US was green on Friday. S&P up a third. Nasdaq up a tenth of a percent. Both closed all-time highs. Asia is red, with both Sydney and Tokyo off 0.1%. Commodities, all green. Gold, 1,820. Brent running higher again, 83.77. Rand, 15.02. Opening call, looking for a red open on our top 40, about 120 points down. That is 0.2%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Petri Radenhurst, founder, Herenia Capital Advisors. Petri, appreciate the morning time. Your report, which you put out Sunday afternoons, Russell 2000. This is kind of what the small mid-cap index in the U.S., literally 2,000 stocks, literally gone nowhere for pretty much all of this year, but does look to be breaking out to new highs, perhaps a bit of a pullback to retest, but finally on the go.
Yeah, good morning. And it does seem to be finally on the go. In this sort of weekly game plan that you referred to, we actually sort of kind of call for a soft week, if you will. In fact, expecting that pullback to happen. But as you mentioned, that Russell 2000 index has been stuck in that sideways range for pretty much almost 11 months or so now, so almost a year. And it finally broke out last week. Now, just a caveat of sort of warning, what we saw last week was actually, well, October, let's start there, was the highest volume of, for option trading relative to equities ever in the history of U.S. markets, right?
Wow.
Last week, Thursday, saw the biggest single day of option trading ever at $940 billion. So on average, options volume is trading about 140% of equities volume, which meaning for every one equity share that's being traded, 1.4 options are being traded, right? So options volume is bigger than equities, and that is a large part of what we've seen. Stocks like Tesla do really well on the back of, obviously, some of these meme stocks, you know, was also driven by options. So it's happening, you know, people are buying huge amounts of calls, often 2, 3, or 4 day contracts. And then the banks have to go out and hedge these contracts and just buy huge amounts of volume, more volume than what's actually trading in the options market, in order for them to be able to hedge those positions, those options contracts. So if that cools down a little bit this week, we think that might be a bit of a catalyst for a pullback. Not obviously not the end of the world, but that could potentially bring the market back and indices like the Russell 2000, for example, to come back and retest that breakout level. From there, you know, obviously there are some economic data points this week, so we'll watch those. If everything seems all right, then, you know, if those and the support levels hold, then those could be potentially good entries. So a little bit of patience is potentially is most likely necessary. But as you mentioned, I mean, it is a long-term buy signal, right? So it does look encouraging that small caps are starting to come to the party as well. And if we could get a sustained rally from them over the next 6 to 12 months, It does seem as though the market could be somewhat higher.
Yeah, and that's, folks who've got U.S. accounts, the code is IWM for that ETF. Bringing it back to home, NASPAS, which had looked like it had some legs, it looked like things were going okay with it, suddenly it's starting to actually look a little bit weaker. That, of course, bad for our market if it does, because it's still the biggie.
Yeah, and also just you know, something to put on the radar for the week. They also have results out of Tencent later this week, which could potentially be a catalyst for the entire sector. So not just NASPAS. And obviously, our market is very reliant on the NASPAS process combination because it's such a big proponent of our top 40 index, and so much is attached to our top 40 index that. You know, if NASPAS really runs hard, we'll see basket buying across the whole market in order to stay in line with the rising index, right? So I think the big number here is, you know, as a disclaimer, we are long NASPAS at the moment on shorter-term trading accounts. And we're kind of looking at this formation that was making a bit of a flat top triangle as a potential bottoming pattern. And that seems to now have failed. However, we don't want to make any decisions before we've seen what Tencent results look like, right? If there's a beat, obviously, NASPAS could move upwards really quickly. It probably is a situation where at least it's seeming, you know, like it might have been a little overdone. Some of the fears around Chinese tech was maybe a little bit exacerbated. So it could be a really good opportunity, but we'll have to see what earnings have been like.
Yeah, and those results out, I think it's Friday coming through. We'll leave that there. Petri Redenhurst, Herenia Capital, appreciate the early morning time.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Jason Lightfoot. He's a portfolio manager at Future Growth. Jason, appreciate the early morning time. A recent article you put out talking around gross fixed capital formation in the economy. Let's first touch off on gross fixed capital formation. That's essentially spending, economic activity, sort of going into things such as equipment, such as transport assets, such as electricity and the like, which gives you a sense of sort of that capital formation as it builds up in an economy.
Hi, Simon. Thanks very much for having me. So gross fixed capital formation really is spending on the true capital goods that drive the economy. So as you said, investments on things like, you know, toll roads, harbors, ports, those sorts of things. And South Africa's numbers have really been dismal over the last couple of years. Sure, we had this nice big ramp up so just for the World Cup in 2010, but since then it's been really subpar and well below you know, other emerging economies, which is really a sad state of affairs.
Yeah, the chart that, I mean, it goes back to 1960. We're at pretty much the lowest level since then. We're sub 15%. I mean, what would be in an ideal level? Because as you say, you know, this is toll roads, this is ports, this is that key infrastructure that you've got to build ahead of the demand for a country to sort of grow into it.
Yeah, I think history dictates that, you know, emerging economies should be anything between probably 25% and 30%, and currently I think we're well below that. We're probably sitting at about 12 to 14% at the moment.
Mm-hmm. And is it, you know, you make the comment, availability of monetary capital is perhaps not the shortfall. Certainly we've seen some big numbers from government. What we're not seeing is that actually sort of getting into the projects. It's getting stuck somewhere in one place, as municipalities and irregular spending, but it's not going from the promises to the ports and the roads.
Yeah, I mean, that's 100% correct. The shortfall of capital isn't really the problem. If you look at the size of the pension fund industry itself, it's probably north of 4 trillion rand, and then obviously you've got potential capital from the banking institutions. It's just around the fact that the shortfall of bankable opportunities for those investors. So I mean, if you look at the FITS program itself, in terms of looking at bankable opportunities, they're very few and far between. So we've done some analysis to get a sense of what the actual capital requirement is for opportunities over the next 10 to 15 years. And that's currently north of about 1.8 trillion rand, which is a massive amount. But if you actually break it down and look at the bankable opportunities that are out there, you know, are based on those projects, probably about, only about, I'd say about 5% of those are in a true bankable form for investors like ourselves to play a role.
Yeah, okay. That 5% is a terrifyingly small number. Because I was going to say, is this an hindrance with Regulation 28? I know there's been talk around the changes in that, etc. But from what you're suggesting, that actually, no, I mean, that certainly might help the process, but it's not going to fundamentally change it if we get those changes.
Yeah, 100% correct. I mean, those deals or opportunities need to get a stage of bankability, and that's really where government needs to play an important role, you know, through its DFIs, like the DBSA and the like.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, they have set up the likes of the Infrastructure Fund. We've got Infrastructure South Africa that are playing a role in terms of showing that transactions go through a stage where they are assessed and are sort of kind of, you know, put into a place where they can reach a stage of bankability. But I think a lot more needs to be done to bring the capital markets on board.
Yeah, and the one success story you do mention, because it's not all doom and gloom out there, is the Lesotho Highlands Water Project Phase 2, which for us in Joburg is hugely important because that's where our water comes from. But that has reached a financial close and actually is sort of working through the process. So there is some happening, just patently not enough.
Yeah, I mean, definitely there are some success stories like that. That was a great opportunity, and to obviously enhance and you know, further build on the existing Lesotho Water Highlands project. But again, another prime example of where the private sector and the public sector were able to partner together was the renewable energy program. And that's really a great success story where billions have been invested over the last 10 years or so and continue to do so.
Yeah, we'll leave that there. It's Jason Lightfoot, Portfolio Manager at Future Growth. Appreciate the early morning, sir.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Training Arthur Neil Jugmahan, Senior Investment Analyst in Nedbank Investments. And I appreciate the early morning time. Talking China, I want to sort of maybe get to the end of the story first and work our way backwards, which is the VIEs, those variable interest entities, which a lot of companies such as Tencent, Alibaba, if we are buying them, we're actually buying them via these VIEs. It's a weird structure used in China. Is it something that shareholders should be massively worried about? I mean, short answer, is it a dangerous structure for us?
Good morning, Simon. Thanks very much for having me here. I'm very pleased to be here. So, yeah, it's a very good question you bring up on the VIEs. I think it's something which, for a long time, there has been a lot of risk inherent in there. And as you know, probably more recently, investors have become a lot more aware of the inherent interests, and that's what's leading to a lot of share price falls. I think if you look at efficiency in Africa, we are buying Tencent through the VIE structure, and look, it's probably worth mentioning at this point that not all VIEs have the same level of strength in terms of actual access and ownership to the underlying cash flows. So investors do need to do their work. You know, it's not a case where you can just take a blanket approach and say, look, they're all good or they're all bad. But there is definitely a risk in there. And as with any investment, you have to be comfortable and confident that you are being suitably paid to take certain risks. And if there's a mismatch between those risks,
you probably should rather stay away.
Yeah, I hear what you say there. And then the question, I suppose, is the Tencent VIE one that is better structured and hence perhaps a lower risk, or is it perhaps one of the more scary ones?
Look, it's quite hard to say whether it's completely good or completely bad. I mean, probably at this point, it's not as good or as bad as people are making it out to be. But nevertheless, I do think that, you know, as I mentioned just now, investors have to be wary of where they believe the true intrinsic value is relative to the price that they are required to pay. And probably right now, you know, the share price have come back a bit relative to earlier in the year. Investors are getting paid a bit more to take those risks. And look, everyone has to make that kind of analysis for themselves.
But I like your point there. In essence, it's that risk balance. Let's move to common prosperity, a phrase that the Communist Party and leaders have been throwing around a lot in China. In essence, sort of worried about the exceedingly rich and even some of the sectors, such as education, which private education basically got closed down overnight. This has scared investors a lot over this year, late last year. Is it something which is as scary as it sounds? I mean, common prosperity as a sort of broad idea, I look at it and I think that can't be the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, Sam, I agree with you as well. I also don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I think with China, you know, we often see the headlines, some of these super wealthy billionaires, you know, often making the news and, you know, going off and buying fancy planes and yachts and so on. But we don't actually hear about kind of half of the population who are in dire need of poverty relief. And, you know, one day we'll probably look back at this whole thing and say, look, you know, China was, you know, an excellent case study for kind of the three ESG pillars. Because what they're trying to do now is kind of focus in kind of each of those areas and really try and uplift the country from various perspectives. I mean, you mentioned about education as well. You know, a lot of those private education companies are literally just after profits at the expense of, you know, really costing people huge amounts of money, which, you know, it's so difficult for them to kind of pay for their children and to buy houses and just to do kind of the basic things which, you know, many of us take for granted in South Africa, actually. So, you know, we probably look back and say, you know, the Chinese government were doing the right thing. I mean, China typically have their own way of doing things, which may shock the esteem investors, as we've seen with the share price moves as well. But I think in the long term, they probably are doing the right thing, and it will certainly be an adjustment period. But what you'll probably find is that as income levels of the broader population do increase, you know, the typical corporates that where we've seen share prices getting hit now, you know, will ultimately benefit from that as well. So there will be a longer-term benefit, I believe.
So then the question, which a lot of people are saying, is should China even be considered an investment destination at this point? My sense from chatting with you over these few minutes is the answer is yes, but, and the but is, like with any investment, there are risks. Just, I suppose, make sure you know what you're doing and make sure you are aware and comfortable with the associated risk.
Simon, I think you're exactly spot on. You know, unfortunately, from a human behavioral bias perspective, you know, human beings don't tend to do very well when it comes to investing, where, you know, as you know, after a market crash, everyone actually wants to pull out. And after the market's done very well, you know, that's when everyone wants to invest. And that's usually exactly the wrong time when people should be actually making those moves. I mean, you can't expect to kind of buy high and sell low, expect to make huge amounts of money in investing. But I guess, you know, just on your question of whether China is investable, I think, you know, as with anything, you know, you really should be focusing on companies where the value that you're getting, you know, actually exceeds the price that you're going to pay. And, I mean, coming back to your VIE question, actually, you know, there's actually many local listed companies that are operating in line with government policy, and which are doing fantastic things and are offering excellent value. So, you know, it's not like you can say a blanket thing that you just discard anything that has China kind of related to it. And that is the same with any other region that you could consider investing in as well, you know, whether it's EM or DM. You know, you really have to be careful.
Know what you're doing, know your risks, be comfortable with those risks. We'll leave it there. Noel Jogmohan is a senior investment analyst, Nedbank Group Investments. Appreciate the early morning this morning. And that's our question we're asking you on our Twitter and LinkedIn poll around those VIEs, variable interest entities. Does the structure bother you? Is it something which you say, well, I don't want to touch those shares because they're VIEs? Or is it something which, as Noel says, you actually just need to understand what the process is and understand that investing comes with risk? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. That's it for today. A poll on Friday, we were asking about MTN after their very strong quarterly update. Now, news over the weekend that they want to buy Telkom. We're asking you, are you buying? Are you holding? 45% of you, yep, you're holding, you're loving it. A third of you are still worried about sudden government fines. The comment from Chantal Marx is, you know, as long as oil is high, Nigeria's fine. It's when oil goes lower and suddenly they need some cash. And maybe that's a bit of a jaundiced view, but that's how the market seems to look at it. A fifth of you said, looking for an entry still. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available just after 7. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Nabuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.